With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Simply go to tntradio.live. This is the Freeman Report with James Freeman on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Hello, it's Wednesday, the 25th of January, 2023. Welcome to any new listeners to the Freeman Report. And we've had all of the top names on the show in the last, well, it's only just been a week and a half so far. And I'm only just getting going. Tomorrow, we've got John Campbell. And we've got a whole host of new guests, all big names lined up for the coming weeks. And it's going to be a great show today, as I have not just one, but two freedom warriors on the show, both of them speaking out heavily in their respective countries. Now, they are on the same mission as me, which is to wake people up to the truth. The truth that our governments are now in bed with the media and big corporations, and they are lying to us. I know, they've always lied to us, right? And you'd be right in thinking that. But what's different now is that they're actively working together against the best interests of the 99%, and that's you and me. So how long will it take for the silent majority to wake up? Will they wake up in time? Will they ever wake up? These are some of the questions that I want to put to my guests today. So, first up, I have Senator Alex Antic. Alex is a senator for South Australia with the Liberal Party. He was elected in 2019, and prior to that, he was a senior associate in a law firm. We'll be talking about all sorts: Davos, the WEF, the World Health Organization and its secret talks on the international health regulations and the pandemic accord, surveillance, CBDCs and digital ID, and also the Australian economy and its energy policy, or lack of it, like the UK. And I'll also be interested to hear from Alex about China's influence on Australia. Second up, I have Christine Anderson, MEP. Christine is a German member of the European Parliament and AfD party member. There's so many things I want to ask Christine: how she got into politics, why is she so passionate about standing up for what is going wrong. We'll also be talking about her new documentary, Fighting for Freedom. And I want to understand what Christine thinks democracy is and what she thinks has gone wrong. We'll also be talking about COVID policy and vaccine policy in her home country of Germany, critical identity theory, the media, censorship. There's too much to cover, but I will try and get through as much as I can. Okay, in a moment, we'll go over to Dee Dee Denslow to talk about one of the big stories of the day. But first, I want to highlight a question that was asked by Esther McVeigh, Member of Parliament, in the House of Commons yesterday. Now, Esther said the following: the chief medical officer recently warned that current non-COVID excess deaths is being driven in part by patients not getting statins or blood pressure medicines during the pandemic. But when we look at the data on statins in opensubscribing.net, which is based upon NHS prescribing, there appears not to be a drop. So where is the evidence? And if there isn't any, what is causing these excess deaths? Will the minister commit to an urgent and thorough investigation on the matter? Now, this is a pretty serious question, right? We're talking about, on average, well, it's over 1,000 a week now, pretty consistently since May. And I've just heard on the news headlines, more than 3,000 excess deaths in 1 week, in one of the weeks in 2023. So you'd expect a pretty serious answer to that question. So what did the vaccine minister say? Well, she got up and she said, we're also seeing deaths, excess deaths in Wales, Scotland, Northern Ireland, and across Europe. There's a range of causes, and she pointed out a few. And then she just said, "And it's happening everywhere." And then she sat down. So she didn't give an answer to the question, because the answers that she gave in terms of the reasons for the deaths are just speculations. We don't know. And it's true that there might be lots of causes, but this is not normal. This is not a normal story about excess deaths to time, which we see every year. This is happening all over the world. It's not good enough. And I'm going to keep on going on about this until something is done. I think you know my view. I think Sir Christopher Whitty, the chief medical officer, should resign, because he's been briefing government based upon no evidence. In fact, the evidence is contrary to what he's been briefing government on. And I think we need an independent public investigation into this urgently. Right. Now, if you have any suggestions for guests or maybe a particular topic that you would like to hear on TNT Radio, if you do, then we want to hear from you. Simply complete the suggestion form on the TNT Radio website and help us make a difference on TNT Radio. My name is James Freeman, and this is the Freeman Report on TNT Radio.
Talking the talk.
I like the conversation.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Right, Darren, the U.S. Food and Drink Administration mulls yearly COVID jabs. What's that all about, Darren? Tell us.
Yeah, just like you, James, the vaccination story, which will probably be ongoing for months and years to come, is something that we shouldn't let go. We should treat it like a dog does with a bone until we start getting answers, which we're not at the moment. But this comes on, the antics that went on in the House of Parliament in the UK comes on from this story, in which some US health officials have voiced skepticism in the new vaccine strategy, calling for annual shots tailored to particular viral variants. The FDA is weighing whether to recommend annual COVID-19 vaccinations tailored to specific strains, proposing updated shots every year to keep up with newly emerging variants. In a briefing document published on Monday, the FDA's Vaccines and Related Biological Products Advisory Committee outlined a new strategy for COVID immunizations, stressing the need to streamline its existing recommendations. Set to discuss the plan during an agency meeting later this week, the FDA committee said it was considering simplifying the composition and immunization schedules for coronavirus vaccines, as well as updating all shots to target the same variants. It compared the plan to the strategy long used to combat the flu. Similar to the approach with influenza, the global nature of SARS-CoV-2 strain evolution warrants a global response when evaluating and recommending vaccine strain composition changes. Transitioning to annual shots with uniform composition can help to boost vaccine coverage and compliance, as well as facilitate clearer communication with the public and reduce vaccine administration errors, the document continued. The advisors noted that the higher risk individuals, such as the elderly or those with compromised immune systems, may require 2 doses annually, but said most individuals will need only 1. And I am sure me and you, James, we would probably both argue that nobody needs a shot of this mRNA vaccine. As far as I'm concerned, it's less dangerous than the flu, statistically. The flu shot has never prevented or got rid of the flu. Again, that's borne out in the statistics. And yet here we are having the FDA in the face of overwhelming evidence that suggests that these vaccines need to be pulled, are trying to get the COVID vaccine on the sort of annual schedule next door to the flu shot. And I suspect many, many people, by the time that this is put in place, will not be wanting it.
Yeah, they're really determined to get these mRNA shots into us somehow, aren't they? I mean, whether it's via COVID shots, we hear they're working on mRNA for cancers now, for flu. Let's back up a little bit first as well. You know, I think it's pretty clear now this is a man-made virus. I don't think there's much doubt about that. the American government via Fauci was funding gain-of-function research in Wuhan on coronaviruses. And, you know, there's also sequences in the DNA of COVID, which Moderna patented about 3 or 4 years before the pandemic even hit. And I think some scientists in Europe have calculated that there's something in the lines of a 3 trillion to one chance that could have happened just by uh-huh. random chance. So that is really important to point that out first. Now, why are they so determined to get these shots into us? Now, in the UK, you know, the UK government has been banging on about life sciences in terms of it being the future hope for the UK economy. Now, they've been ploughing billions and billions into this research over the last couple of decades. You know, and I've talked to pharmaceutical insiders, people that have worked as consultants into the manufacturing and logistics of these products, and they are not ready yet. They are not ready. They're not ready because it's very, very complicated to make these. We're talking about manufacturing spread across different sites, and you know the ingredients need to be transported at certain temperatures. And this is one of the reasons why we get errors in the batches, you know, because, I mean, during the pandemic, for example, when we had vaccine centers set up in car parks, part of the manufacturing process was actually going on in the car parks with untrained people. Yeah, they're supposed to have a license for it. The law says they have to have a license for this type of sort of post-manufacturing processes, which is part of the manufacturing process. They need a license, but they didn't. And people weren't trained. And we now know that there were lots of injuries that were clustered around particular batches. So yeah, I'm pulling my hair out, really. I mean, at some point, I think all of this has got to come out. I can't see how it's not going to come out now. There's just too many people that are talking about this, experts, people in alternative media like me, across the world as well. This is not just the UK, it's across the world. And we're not going to stop. We're not going to stop until the truth comes out. So at some point, this is going to spill out into the mass consciousness. And I think it probably already has started to do that. What are your thoughts on that, Darren? Where do you think we are right now?
I think the cat's out of the bag. I don't like using the word hope, but I hope the cat is out of the bag. It's now being brought up in Parliament, and it's not just, you know, Andrew Bridgen, who they got rid of and swept him under the carpet and hope it went away. Now we've had Esther McVeigh. The answer that was given by whoever it was who responded, I didn't realize she was the vaccine minister. Interesting that she responded, for her to say, oh, it's happening everywhere. It's COVID. It's the flu, was an insane answer to give. It didn't answer. It just,
yeah, don't worry about it. It's happening everywhere. Yeah, relax. It's fine.
Don't worry. It's happening in the USA. Don't worry about it. Yeah, lots of people are dying. Yeah. And the problem is these bodies are piling up, James. And as these bodies pile up, these people in power, the people in our government, American government, wherever, they're going to have nowhere to hide. They're going to have to face up to the reality of all these people who are dying. And I think they're going to run out of options and excuses, and eventually they're going to have to say, it's the jab. And then these vaccines will get pulled and there will be consequences.
Yeah, exactly. And I think people are going to be incredibly angry when they find out the truth. And, you know, we've got a very, very long list. I know lots of people who I'm working with have got a very, very long list of all of the MPs and public officials that knew about this, because we've been emailing them. We've got audit trails. We've got trails of all the evidence from experts that we've been sending them all the way through back from 2021. So there's no escaping this. You know, they need to pick. If they're going to change their mind and they're going to start telling the truth, they need to do it very, very sharpish, because, you know, we're not going to let people off the hook when this comes out, and the public are going to be really angry. Right, Darren, thank you very much. I know you're going to join me in the second hour again for another one of the big stories of the day. But we're going to take a quick break now. And then when we come back, we will have Senator Alex Antic. My name's James Freeman, and this is the Freeman Report on TNT Radio.
Pervoy Morich on TNT Radio.
From my hometown, Chicago, I was just reading that Mayor Lori Lightfoot, her campaign was caught sending emails to Chicago public schools and Chicago public school teachers asking them to offer extra credit to students who volunteered to get Lori Lightfoot reelected. And then you've got like these progressive liberals shouting at conservatives or whatnot, anyone who's not left liberal, for being biased, for not being neutral or objective. And look what they're doing. And she says it was simply a mistake. They don't even own up to it. They're like, yeah, you know, we were out of line. What we did was wrong. No, it was a mistake. Yeah, unbelievable.
Pervoy Morich on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hey, wouldn't it be great if life came with a remote control? You know, you could hit pause when you needed to, or hit rewind. Like that time you knocked down that wasp's nest.
Uh-oh.
Or that time you forgot to roll up your windows in the car wash.
Fantastic.
Yeah, a remote control would have come in handy then. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome. But prediabetes does. With early diagnosis and a few healthy changes like managing your weight, getting active, stopping smoking, and eating healthier, you can stop prediabetes before it leads to type 2 diabetes. It's easy to learn your risk. Take the 1-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Life doesn't come with a remote control.
Yikes!
So you're on your own with the wasps. You have the power to take control of prediabetes. Visit doihaveprediabetes.org today. That's doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
Mom, stop yelling.
Oh, you haven't heard yelling.
Your kids may not be listening, but pretty much every voice-activated smart device is. Just tell it to play TNT Radio.
Welcome back. It's Wednesday, the 25th of January, 2023. And today's show is about freedom warriors. On the line next up, I've got Senator Alex Antic. Now, Alex is a senator for South Australia with the Liberal Party. He was elected in 2019, and prior to that, he was a senior associate at a law firm. Hello, Alex.
Hi, James. How are you?
I'm really good. I'm very, very busy at the moment. I'm on the second week of my new radio show, but it's going fantastic. I'm honoured that you would come on the show with me. How's things with you, okay?
Well, we're all good here, and congratulations on the show too. We've got an outlet in TNT in Australia, and they do great work, so it's good to see you jumping on board, and I'm sure you're going to carry on that tradition. But no, things are, look, I think business as usual here in Australia. I think we're sort of in the same realm as many of the other Western liberal democracies floating around. We're a little bit under siege from some of these ideological crusades, but the weather's nice, at least, I can tell you that.
Yeah, I'm very jealous because it's absolutely freezing here. It's nice and warm in my studio, but it's freezing outside. And, of course, you are currently in your summer holidays at the moment, aren't you?
That's right. We sure are. And it's just we've hit a nice little patch as well. We did have a little streak. Yeah, I know. I was going to tell you about the rain, but that's all right. I won't now. I'll tell you about the sun instead. So,
no. Right. Okay. So, as I said, today's show is about freedom warriors. I consider myself a freedom warrior. Is that how you see yourself, Alex?
Look, I hope so. I agree with you. I think, your work through UKIP and others, and then certainly in the last couple of years has sort of proven that. But look, I hope so. I mean, our system is a little bit similar to yours in the UK. But, I mean, we always have our own little nuances and differences, but the principles are the same. I think we've seen the same things rolling out here in Australia, if not sometimes in a worse case than other parts of the world. And we've needed people to stand firm, and I hope I've done that. I probably, like a lot of your listeners, feel very strongly that we're living through times that are going to be reviewed very carefully as the days go on. And, look, I hope I'm on the right side of history. I think I am.
I think you are, Alex. I mean, I've been following you for quite some time now. You were very outspoken during the pandemic. You had quite a few standoffs with the government about vaccines and whatnot. And I've followed you for a while now, and you've always been consistent, and you've always been on the right side, I think. And history will show all of us will be on the right side of history. On that, how far are you prepared to go with all of this, Alex? Because, my second guest, Christine Anderson, you know, she's made it clear that this is the hill that she will die on if she's going to die on a hill. And I feel like that as well. I mean, how far are you prepared to go? I mean, would you sort of stand up to the government and be arrested if need be?
Well, look, it's hard to know how far it goes, but it's interesting the language that's being used there, the hill to die on. We've had a couple of people here in Australia who've used very similar language, completely independent of those sorts of comments. And myself and another senator from Queensland, which has even better weather, last year took what could only be described as, I think, a very career-limiting position where we refused to vote with our own government in the parliament until such time as we saw that there was some movement made on some of these freedom issues regarding COVID. Now, yeah, that doesn't happen very often, and in one sense, it may well be an issue of political mortality. Who knows? But we both spoke about it in exactly those terms. If ever there was a hill to die on, it's this one. I think these are very serious times, and I think we just have to do whatever we can do. I say this all the time. People are all doing their own things in different ways. You've got the radio show and have been doing, your other work through the WCH and others. And I just happened to find myself in the musical chair of politics during this pretty important time. So we're all just doing our bit in one way or another.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, I think there is going to be a reckoning now because, I mean, I've been saying this for over a year now, and everything, every event that comes up and everything that we do, I think, right, this is the one, this is the thing that's going to break the camel's back. And then, of course, it doesn't. We have another false dawn. And I think with hindsight now, the experience I've got is each time we've just moved that needle a little bit further on. More people have come on board. And I think there's so many people on board now that there will be a reckoning. And I think those people who do die on the hill, I know Adrian Bridgen has been treated awfully in the UK. I think once that reckoning comes and the public learn about it, they will be welcomed back into the fore. Now, Alex, before you went into politics, you were a senior associate at a law firm. Do you think that experience, do you call on that experience now? Does that help you in what you do?
I think it seems like a long time ago now, and I think I've forgotten everything I knew about the law, which wasn't very much in the first place. But I have to say that I think unfortunately that the law and politics do kind of lend themselves to each other. I think there's a certain talk and understanding legislation and that sort of thing, but I also think the law is a pretty combative environment, and I think politics is too. I think politics is almost war without weapons in many senses, and I think it did hold me in good stead there. But in many other ways, I think we probably need less lawyers in Parliament, frankly. I don't know if it's the same in the UK, but we've got a lot here in Australia. And one of my great hopes and dreams and missions, something I'm really trying to work towards, is bringing everyday people back into politics, trying to get them to join parties and, get involved, because we've created a kind of a political class in this country. And I think that's been part of the problem. I think having people that were prepared to have something else to fall back on, another career, rather than having worked their way through political parties for their entire life, has been a really important thing in this country. We need more people that are prepared to rock the boat in many. And if ever this was the case, it was now. I think some of this stuff has been a real eye-opener. And you're actually right. I mean, I watch my Twitter feed every day, and particularly in the last couple of weeks, where we're just seeing more and more understanding and awareness out there. I think the dam will break, but we need people to have some courage. So it's we've got a long way to go.
We have. And I totally agree with you there on career politicians. I think that, look, you don't need qualifications to become a politician, but I think there should be one qualifying question. If you want to be a politician, you shouldn't be allowed to. I think that's that is how we solve that problem. We don't. We shouldn't have people who just want to be in power. You know, they're the opposite of the people that we want in. Right, Alex. Let's get stuck in. So Davos and the WEF. Tell me about what you're talking about with that at the moment, and your view of what's going on in Davos. Obviously, we've had a lot of the big names didn't show. What's your assessment of what's going on at the moment?
Well, it's hard to see from a distance, isn't it? But it looks to me like the single worst conglomerate of corporate for strategic planning days you would ever see in your life, all bowled into 1 week. So I can't think of anywhere I would rather be less. But, you know, needless to say, both you and I have not received an invite and are very unlikely to in the near future. So it's hard to see from distance. But it seems to be that I think, and this is just my perception, that over the last 2 or 3 years in particular, people, the general public, are starting to understand what we're dealing with here. And maybe that's the reason why some didn't want to show up. I mean, I don't know. I'm just speculating. Maybe it's bad for their rep, so to speak, but you know, and they haven't shown up this year. But in any event, it seems to be a series of similar assertions about, and I heard it summed up once, and it sort of stuck with me that it's an event where billionaires tell millionaires how to make the rest of us live, and that really feels true as it is ever. We saw some extraordinary statements coming out from people like the UK's own Tony Blair about, you know, national vaccine databases. We saw the usual cavalcade of people talking about, you know, things as far-reaching as how to impinge further on freedom of speech. So, look, it seems to me to be the very embodiment of, you know, this concept of stakeholder capitalism, which, you know, I just think is a very dangerous concept. And I described it as being a globalist theme park, you know, and we could use it the term the griftiest place on earth. And that seems to be what Davos is. But I think there is, once again, a little bit of an awakening happening. And I do think people are starting to understand that this concept of the rise of the unelected is happening everywhere in the West. And it's sort of, if nothing else, it's emblematic through the WEF and through the Davos Forum, which seems to showcase the business model.
It certainly does. And I think I agree with you. The reason maybe lots of certainly public officials and politicians are not turning up, it doesn't help, you know, their case when Schwab gets on stage and actually talks openly about infiltrating governments and calling up cabinets. And he's got half of them a WEF on his side. Right, Alex, don't go anywhere. We're just going to take a quick break for the news headlines and then we'll be back straight away where we will pick off where we left off.
What brings you here?
News Talk Radio.
TNT Radio News.
Matt Boylan here with a look at your TNT headlines. Beijing has blasted Washington for portraying China as a barrier to solving Africa's debt crisis, saying it's the US that's destroying the continent's economy. Germany has backflipped on its decision not to send main battle tanks to Ukraine, and former US Vice President Mike Pence has become the latest US leader to be found illegally harboring stolen classified documents in his home.
Globalist agendas, democratic rights at risk, corruption, propaganda. It never stops. Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
Welcome back with me, James Freeman. This is the Freeman Report. And on the line, I have Senator Alex Antic. Hello, Alex.
James, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good. So before the break, we were talking about Klaus Schwab. We were talking about the WEF. I know a little bit about Tony Blair. So I've heard rumours that he might even take over from Klaus Schwab as leader of the WEF. He obviously talked about the need for digitisation across the world in terms of healthcare. And we've also had Albert Bourla, the CEO of Pfizer, talking about things like pills that when you swallow them, they send, they transmit a signal to the government to let them know that you've been compliant and you've taken your medicine. What do you make of all of this?
Oh, look, I guess I'd say from the outset, I'm always concerned not to take little clips out of sequence. But, and you know, so these things can often sound much worse than they are in short bursts than they were in reality. But the language that's coming out of these forums, or this particular forum, seems to be consistently like that, you know. And we do hear these clips, and, you know, it's often repeated, the one you just said about Klaus Schwab saying, you know, we pierce the cabinets, you know, we effectively have people we can speak to everywhere. Now, on one level, none of that sounds alarming, and on another level, it sounds entirely alarming that sort of influence is happening. So we're seeing this consistent theme through people being tracked and monitored, and that seems to be the next frontier to me. I mean, you know, there's this issue about surveillance states, and we're seeing now the push into the 15-minute cities, and here in Australia, we've got a very, very closely, impending piece of legislation which will probably be reintroduced into our parliament this year. The so-called, and you know, trust me, the name is ironic as it could be, the Trusted Digital Identity Bill. The Trusted Digital Identity Bill means, you know, you can trust it because it's in the name. But we're seeing this sort of control narrative coming through everywhere now, and that is the flavour of all of this. These digital ID bills, I think, are rolling out in other countries too, and they're all largely drawn by the same language that we hear at forums like Davos and the WEF. So, you know, I was very alarmed by some of the statements that came out about vaccine passports, global passports, and, you know, this digital ID format for future tracking people, and particularly tracking their medical habits. But frankly, after the last 2 years, it's hard to be surprised by any of this anymore. If you went back 10, I certainly would have been one of the people you would have put into the category of that's just fantasy land, that could never happen. And here we are. And so that language seems to be going up a notch at the moment at these forums, and I think we need to be alarmed.
I absolutely agree with you. Here in the UK, we've got the online safety bill. We've got other bills as well, which are sort of capping protests and things like that. So it seems to be going on, these types of things. And digital identity, I'm sure, is one of the next bills that will be coming down the road in the UK. And this is why we need ordinary people in politics. Because, look, you know, these things of themselves are not necessarily bad. I mean, digital ID, I've thought a lot about this, and actually there are benefits actually which we could see. I mean, you know, elections, we've got falling turnouts at election in Wales here for the parliament, around, I think it was less than 47% of people turned out to vote. Now imagine if you could verify who you were on your phone and you could vote in an election. We would see turnout, increase vastly. Now, they won't do that, of course, because, you know, they're quite happy with the people who don't vote because they're disfranchised and they don't believe in what's going on and they've lost trust. They don't want those people voting. But I think it's important just to point out that these technologies are not bad in themselves, are they? So what's really important here is the debates that we're having in politics. Ordinary people need to start paying attention, and we need to try and get ordinary people in to the parliaments to actually stand up for us. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, look, I think you've summed it up really well. It is really genuinely important. I guess that was a bit of a throwaway before my time in politics. I used to hear this all the time, how important it was to have people of different backgrounds and all that sort of stuff, whatever it may be. But the truth is, the thing that we're really missing, if you want to look at a diversity target, it's regular people. That's the one that we're missing at the moment. And, you know, we've had it here in Australia growing, I think, for decades, where, you know, on one side of the political spectrum from our Labor Party, same as yours there, we would have people coming from the trade union movement who'd go and work for a political office and then go and become the politician and then go and become lobbyists. But unfortunately, both sides of politics do a very similar thing now. We, from my side, political staffers are the ones that find their way into politics, and it's very, very hard for ordinary people. So one of my passion projects has been trying to locate people to join, get them involved, get them trained up, and get them involved in a way where they can actually have a realistic chance at getting pre-selected and going to parliament, because you know, if you don't have people that are sort of outside that swamp, and I, by the way, I should say, I don't know if it's the same in the UK, but here in Australia, the political class almost speak a different language than the person on the street. I assume it's the same. But when I walk into Parliament in Australia, I find myself having to pinch myself before I walk in and say, don't get sucked into this agenda today. This is not what's happening in the real world. And, you know, that hopefully is a product of having not been, you know, a creature of the political spectrum until very recently. And look, I just think it's critical. We need people that have careers they can fall back on if they speak without fear or favour, that they can do so without the fear of being effectively unemployable as you would be if you were a career politician. So, I can only say that in you know, out there in the big wide world where everyone is, that applies to every single country that elects people and sends them to parliaments, congresses or houses of representatives. We've got to break the political class. We've got to break it down.
Yeah, we certainly have. And there's two things for that. If you're listening and you think that you could be a good politician, you could speak the truth and represent the people, then put yourself forward, even if it's as an independent, or go and find a party and put yourself forward, like many of us have. And if you're listening and actually, you know, that's not for you, make sure that you vote for somebody with a background that is not, you know, that's clear that they're not career politicians, somebody with real life experience, a person like me or you. So those two things, either put yourself forward or vote for somebody who's going to represent you. Right. Okay, Alex. So the World Health Organization and the International Health Regulations. I know you've been talking about this recently. Tell us all about that.
Yeah, look, this is once again, one of the sleeper cells. You know, we find that there are hot button topics in politics probably everywhere in the world that just get all the attention, and the really important stuff doesn't. And, you know, the digital ID bill for me is one of those. But what's happening with the World Health Organization and what is effectively a creep on power, you know, globally, is one of the most concerning things I think that's floating around out there at the moment. And for people that don't know, the World Health Organization's a globalist body, if you like, and it is the sort of the governing body of the World Health Assembly, which votes on all sorts of things. And I mean, you know, you have more background on this than I would be, but one of them is operating and putting into place the international health regulations, which are pretty important set of global rules which countries who are signatories to that treaty abide by. And what's happening at the moment is that there is a series of secret meetings that are going on between various nations of the 195 member states, which are talking about making some pretty serious amendments to those international health regulations. And they are, like, there are a lot of them, but they are effectively looking to broaden and increase the health bureaucracy at a global level, lean on countries that are signatories to effectively hand over power for their own pandemic responses and these sorts of measures, to just highlight a few. We don't know really what's going on. I've asked questions of our own health department here in Australia, and I'm told very helpfully that, yes, they're involved, and no, we haven't put a submission in, but presumably our health department and our delegate there through the government will vote for these. The background of this is the Biden administration mid last year put up a series of other regulations which were effectively designed to do a slightly less egregious but still bad series of amendments, and they failed because some of the third world countries actually voted against them. In this instance, I don't know where it's up to, but people can see them. They're on the WHO's own website, and they're fairly alarming to me. It looks to me to be effectively a global health power grab, and they're insistent. The other thing is there is apparently another treaty being put together as well. It's being called the Pandemic Treaty, which is going to surface soon too. So, I mean, we're seeing these themes everywhere at the moment, and it's this age-old model of using an emergency to grab power. We've seen it time and time again. We see it with a so-called climate emergency. We now see it with pandemic emergencies. And really, when you drill down into all of these, it's about control.
Yeah, absolutely. I think hammer on the nail there. We saw it with the European Union over many, many years. I mean, if you go back as far as Margaret Thatcher time, the reason we didn't join the euro is because they said it'll never work. It'll end up in crisis after crisis. Now, at the time, we thought, you know, they don't know what they're doing. You know, it's going to be a mess. But it actually was by design. They wanted these crises because every time there's a crisis, the answer is, firstly, it's an emergency, so we've got to do something right now without much scrutiny. But it's the answer is always more centralization of power.
That's right.
Right, okay, we're going to pick up on the WHO and the IHR, because I do want to talk about this a little bit more. But we're just going to have a very, very quick break. So don't go anywhere. Stay with me, James Freeman, on the Freeman Report on TNT Radio.
Give me a minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
All right, listen up, all of you boob lovers. I come bearing news. You may soon be able to see bare breasts on Facebook and Instagram. Now, before you get too excited, you need to know that the breasts on display will be limited to those belonging to trans and non-binary users. Women who are born female, their breasts will be seen only in your imagination. It's wokeness at its sickest. You can blame or credit Meta's oversight board for this breastful mess. Is that even a word? But it's not fair, you say? Well, Michael Huff, an LA-based attorney who was formerly a lesbian and who has transitioned to being a man, says the new policy is a violation of the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment, telling the New York Post that cis women's breasts have been sexualized. However, breasts are not sex objects. They are to feed children, the original purpose for breasts. When balancing the interests of anyone's equal rights against another's, our individual rights and liberties must win, or we face a soapy, slippery slope. He didn't say soapy. So there you have it, the latest on the Free the Nipple movement. And yes, that movement is real. Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg for TNT Radio.
A bushfire tip from the New South Wales Rural Fire Service.
It's a fact that cars are a significant cause of bushfire. Parking in long dry grass means hot exhaust and hot brakes may start a fire. When travelling in bushland areas, remember to park in designated car parks or away from dry vegetation. And whatever you do, don't throw cigarette butts out the car window. Prevention of bushfires is your responsibility. Get FireWise. For more information, contact your local fire station.
Claims that renewables are cheap or will lower prices are proven false. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back with me, James Freeman. This is the Freeman Report. And on the line, I have Senator Alex Antic. Now, before the break, we were talking about the World Health Organization and the secret talks at the moment going on to amend the international health regulations. Now, this is really scary stuff, and this is something I'm going to focus on more and more this year with lots of my guests. Because if you remember, the last 2 years, we've had masks, international travel restrictions, local travel restrictions, lockdowns, vaccine mandates, where millions have lost, or certainly tens and tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands have lost their jobs because they refused to get the vaccine. This is really worrying stuff, isn't it, Alex? Because this is what the international health regulations and the amendments they're trying to make. They're trying to centralize power here so that WHO, which is an unelected body, can dictate this to countries. I mean, what I assume you're speaking up about this in Australia, Alex. Are there many other politicians who are aware of this and who are speaking up at the moment?
Yeah, look, I am, as much as one can from you know a mere backbench position in Parliament. So I certainly do. I've sort of come to the conclusion that one of the best things I can do is simply talk about these issues as much as I can, talk about them in Parliament, talk about them in, you know, environments like this and in social media and other sorts of things, because at least, you know, I think it gives it some airplay where we certainly wouldn't get this from our mainstream media. So there are a few. There need to be more, and that's my job, is to try and raise the awareness in the political class here. I mean, I think in many respects our politicians are blinded by bread and circuses sometimes, quite deliberately, that are thrown their way by you know, a media that has no interest in issues like the one regarding the World Health Organization. And we're seeing that at the moment in Australia. We've got the topical debate of the day is the discussion about an Aboriginal Indigenous Australian voice to Parliament. That is bricking into our constitution a requirement for Indigenous Australians to always have a seat in the parliamentary table. Now, people may say, "So what?" Well, there's a whole argument there that I won't bore your listeners with. That's a domestic one, but. In essence, it's soaking up all of the oxygen for the political, narrative. So people, I think politicians, unless you're drawn to these bigger, badder issues that are happening right under our noses by whoever, they just fly under the radar. And I think, the digital ID bill, as I talked about, is another one that I think is a real sleeper issue. So I don't know, but I am worried about the increasing use of this emergency mechanism and the rise of the unelected. We're now seeing these bureaucrats and corporate heads of corporate entities who now wield so much power. It seems to me that the WEF has found out that there is an easier way than controlling governments or having an influence in governments. You can really tap into the unelected. And I think if we boil this all down, James, I think what we're seeing now is a rise of neo-communism. Your late great Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher once said that communism never sleeps, it never goes away, and neither should we. I think in 1979 or thereabouts she made that statement. But I think she would be turning in her grave at the moment to see this centralisation of power returning. It is really what we are seeing is a new genesis of communism rising again, and that should be worrying for anyone.
Yeah, I agree with that with 100%. I agree with you with 100% on that, Alex. Okay, so what can people do about it? Well, listen, if you want information, then there's a really good writer, James Roguski. He's got a Substack. If you go and look for him on Google, so James Roguski, he is fantastic. He does the detailed job. He goes through all of these. I mean, some of these reports, you're talking 60, 70 pages, very complicated language. But James breaks it all down and he presents what they're actually up to. Another organization you can go to get information is the World Council for Health. If you go to their website, you'll find information there and statements from the WCH about what's going on. So what do you do with all that information? Well, I'll tell you what you do. You write to your MP, because we need to start getting more politicians aware of what's going on. Because I truly believe, certainly in the UK here, that most of our politicians are totally oblivious to what is going on. And a lot of them, I think, would be alarmed if they found out this kind of sort of giving out of our sovereignty potentially if these treaties are signed. So do it. Don't just think about it. When you get off after listening to this show today, go and find the information and write to your Member of Parliament. Right, Alex, another big thing that's I think been going on over the past few years, I've heard lots of stories in the media about it, is the Australian economy and its energy policy, and lots of other policies as well. What's going on there?
Well, look, we're probably, in many respects, and you'd get an argument about this, but I would say a little bit behind the eight ball from the Western Europe, who've we've seen the results in Germany, that the grid has been tanked there, and we're seeing what happens. We've had the fortune, I think, of having a conservative government for the better part of the last decade, which has held the fort a little bit. We unfortunately agreed to sign up to net zero or net zero style targets last year, at sort of the tail end of those governments, which of course I opposed, but didn't make much difference in the end. But we're now in a position where we've got a Labor government, a very left-wing Labor government, who are now catching up for all of that lost time. And if you think about Australia, very big country, very mineral-rich country, very energy-rich country. I think we have a third of the world's uranium. We have gas supplies. We have oil supplies. We've got fields everywhere. And we're increasingly seeing those projects getting shut down by the courts. We're seeing the government policy pushing back on them. One of the first things the new Labor government did as it came into power mid-year here in Australia or in the last year was to brick into our legislative targets, a 43% emissions target, which was something that hadn't happened before. And now we're seeing drastic and awful interventions in our energy market that were really a knee-jerk to what is a hugely increasing power price scenario. And businesses are suffering in Australia now, where we're seeing the same sorts of things we're seeing in other parts of the world, where there are impending gas shortages, a grid, you know, coal-fired power stations which have been blown up for years on end. South Australia, where I live, was the very early adopter in some of this terrible stuff. We had a very, very left-wing government around about 7 or 8 years ago, which started blowing up coal-fired power stations. I say blowing up, switching off, I should say, is more accurate. And we actually had a statewide blackout. Now, to give you an idea of what we're looking at in terms of overall area, we're looking at an area the size of France and Spain together, or probably a little bit more, completely blacked out. A lot of it isn't populated, mind you. We have a lot of open space here in this country, but major cities completely blacked out for a period of days on end, simply because of some of these policies. So that's now being seen on a national level. It's starting to pick up. And look, I think we are headed down a similar path that Western Europe has, where people, almost literally businesses, are going to have to close because of their energy bills alone. So this all in a country that has an entire prohibition on nuclear power generation, which we know is safe. It's actually safe and effective, nuclear power generation. One of the few times you can actually use that phrase and use it well. But 30% of the world's uranium and no nuclear industry, it just doesn't make sense. And we've got some tough times ahead.
It certainly doesn't make sense, does it? And you know, I've got no problems with in the future at some point some of these technologies that we use now stopping using them. You know, the air quality in cities. I think electric vehicles are good for that. I don't buy into the whole carbon dioxide is changing the climate debate, but you know. It seems at the moment that they're closing down all of these energy sources. We have not got any real energy strategy. And I mean, that's crazy. Modern cities having blackouts. And it's very, very scary as well, particularly at this time of year when it's very, very cold. And I guess it's the same in Australia during the summer, not having air conditioning and being able to cool things. So it is very, very worrying. Right, we've got about 4 minutes left, Alex. So I just want to touch, because I know this has been a big thing in Australia over the last few years, and that is China's influence on Australia. What is going on there at the moment, Alex?
Well, look, once again, there's a sort of a 2-hour discussion there waiting to go. I'll try and jam it into the 3.5 minutes we have left. But historically, it's going to be hard. We have, I think in this country, we went through a period of time in the last probably 15 years where we really hoped that China would be a great opportunity for Australia, a trading partner, they were building and we had all the natural resources and all of the food and all of the stuff. And that went well for a little period of time. Around about the time of COVID, though, people's eyes finally, thankfully, woke up. I mean, I've long had my suspicions about anything that has the word communist in it, including the words Chinese Communist Party. On a personal level, certainly never fooled by that. But I think people were very hopeful in this country that it wasn't what it was. And really, COVID changed the relationship dramatically, I think. And we saw trade sanctions getting put on because of the language that the CCP didn't like that was coming out of the government, my government at the time. And things really soured. We're seeing that turning around now, unsurprisingly, under a Labor government here. But the influence, the infiltration, the espionage is real. The so-called wolf warrior diplomacy that's employed by this country is real. And we are now, I think, probably on the tip of the spear in terms of showing the rest of the world how careful they have to be about this regime. This is not a good regime. This is a regime which is which is doing terrible things to the Uyghur people in Xinjiang.
Yeah.
It is a regime that just cannot be trusted, and the rest of the world needs to be very careful. And if there are any kids listening, delete TikTok immediately. It is Chinese spyware.
Yeah, and the other thing to mention here is as well is it seems like the Chinese model of social credit system is the blueprint for the rest of the world. Now, Alex, you talked earlier about the fact that you've been looking for people that want to go into politics and trying to identify the right people and help them do. Also, I've assumed that you want people to vote for you. So where can people find you, Alex, and how do they contact you if they would like to get involved in politics?
Well, look, I mean, I've you know, from the sort of political side of it, I've probably my most active thing is Facebook, Senator Alex Antic on Facebook, Instagram as well. We've just got back onto Twitter. That hasn't really started up, but we, you know, the recent events on Twitter show that it might have a future. But look, people can get in touch with me on a range of different ways. I have an email address, alex@believeinblue.com.au, where if there are local people, particularly in South Australia, who are interested in that, then by all means, shoot me an email and I'll be happy to respond. And look, I just hope that all other parts of the world, people are considering the same sorts of motions. I think it's time for the real people to get back involved in politics.
It certainly is. Thank you so much, Alex, for joining me on the show today. I think you're doing a fantastic job. Keep on doing what you're doing, and hopefully at some point in the future, you'll come back on the show with me, James Freeman, on the Freeman Report on TNT Radio.